She wiped her streaming eyes and gave a bitter laugh.
Then he's dead already. Neither of us is of any real worth to our families. The Kai throne is secured by Brishan's older brother and more sons than you can count on one hand. Brishan is a spare without value. Sekhmis will turn her back on him, and her husband will follow her lead.
Serevet looked beyond her into the ever-brightening tree line.
I've never met her, and hope not to, but rumours abound. It's hard to believe that the Shadow Queen of Haradith birthed such a man as Brishan Kashkum.
It's hard to believe anything with a soul came out of that womb.
In that moment, Ildiko hated Sekhmis more than any person she'd ever known.
Whoever in Belawar is paying these sellswords doesn't know there's no love lost between them. So, we have time. Not much, a few days only, but enough to find their hiding place and rescue your husband.
Ildiko twisted her tunic in her hands.
What can I do? Surely there's something I can do.
She hated the helplessness, the lack of martial skills. Common sense dictated that no one could have foreseen such circumstances for her, but the knowledge offered little comfort. Serevet gained his feet and helped her rise as well.
There is, but I want Anuzet's opinion first. The effects of the Marceret should fade and she'll awaken soon. What about her wounds?
He had kind eyes, a soft brown the colour of roasted chestnut, with flecks of gold radiating from the edges of the pupils. They shimmered with a steady humour. He was a good man, a brave one, and his attraction to Anuzet was palpable.
You should know by now the toughness of a Kai. Those wounds won't slow her down, any more than flea bites would.
He patted Ildiko on the arm.
I'll bring you extra blankets. You can rest beside her.
I can't sleep.
There was no possible way she could sleep, not with Brishan out there somewhere, a hostage of Belladine mercenaries.
Try,
Serevek said.
I need you alert and sharp later.
She did as he requested and rolled into the blankets he gave her. She was asleep as soon as her eyes closed. It seemed like only a handful of moments before the sound of voices arguing in Bas-Kai awakened her. Ildiko rubbed her scratchy eyes and squinted at the couple glaring at each other, not far from where she lay alone. Anuzet, wrapped in a blanket tied at her good shoulder, was awake and arguing fiercely with Serevek.
"It's a sound idea,"
he said and crossed his arms. Anuzet mimicked his actions, her features drawn into a scowl. Until someone skewers her or puts a bolt in her.
I saw her handle your horse. She's an adept rider. She can do this. If you want this to work, she needs to do this.
Brishan sacrificed himself to save her. We risk making that sacrifice for naught.
Serevek blew out a frustrated breath.
Oh, stop being so eager to kill him off. He isn't dead.
His body tensed as a furious Anuzet rounded on him, fangs bared. Ildiko threw off her blankets and leapt to her feet.
Please, she said.
The two forgot their fight and turned to her.
I'll do whatever you ask of me. Anything. I'm sorry I'm not a warrior. I wish I were.
Serevek gazed at her with an implacable expression.
We don't need another warrior, Highness. We need bait.
The sun had burned away the last of the lingering morning fog. Ildiko reclined against one of the temple walls and tried not to gnaw her fingernails down to the quick with worry. Instead, she worked to repair the laces on Anuzet's gambeson and watched as the Kai woman paced back and forth with a hitched gait, her lips drawn back against her teeth as she glared at Serevek.
This is taking too long, she snapped.
Seated cross-legged near Ildiko, he didn't bother to look up from his task of sharpening a knife on the whetting stone he held.
"It's taking as long as it needs to," he said calmly. "You might as well sit down before you wear a path in the stones."
No sooner had he finished the sentence than Anuzette went still, listening. "Horses," she said after a moment. The scrape of blade on stone halted as Serevek joined her.
"But no dogs," he said.
A bird's whistle carried through the trees, and Serevek answered back with a similar whistle. He stood and sheathed the knife at his waist.
"We've company, and it's friendly."
The temple ruin was soon filled with both Belladine and hooded Kai warriors and their horses. They split into two groups, the Kai to gather around Anuzette and Ildiko, the Belladine around Serevek. One of the Belladine bowed before Serevek. "We think we know where the raiders are hiding. A honeycomb of caves, no more than a league north of here." Serevek's lip curled, contempt souring his words.
"They're moving farther into my territory, thinking it's safe."
One of the Kai addressed both Anuzette and Ildiko. "We recovered our dead on the other side of the ravine. Two fallen. The raiders fought only long enough to capture the Hersegus and flee." Ildiko's shoulders sagged. She glanced at Serevek.
"You were right,"
he nodded.
"Right now, he's more valuable alive than dead. Now we just need to discover how many we'll face when we rescue him."
The soldier who gave the raiders whereabouts spoke up again. "We've captured one of them." He gestured with a nod over his shoulder when Serevek's eyebrows rose. "We broke up a raid on a lower holt just within our borders. They massacred the family steed in there and stole the sheep and grain. We killed all but one and hanged them from the trees as a warning." Ildiko closed her eyes. So much killing, and over two people who were never supposed to matter. The crowd parted as Akai shoved a human to his knees before Serevek. An impromptu circle formed, caging in their captive. Filthy, lice-infested and splattered with blood, the man glared at Serevek before spying Ildiko, who recoiled from his lascivious, black-toothed leer. One of the Belladine grabbed his arm and shoved the dirty sleeve past his elbow, revealing a patterned marking, tattooed in blue and green ink on his arm. "Clansman, out of the serpent's teeth," the soldier said. Serevek crouched before his prisoner. His voice was mild, almost friendly. All the hairs on Ildiko's nape rose in warning.
"You've travelled a long way to butcher farmers for their grain and a few sheep. How many of you are hiding in the caves?"
The man's eyes slid away. "I don't know anything about caves. We was just stealing because we was hungry."
"So, the four of you made off with an entire herd of sheep and a full wagon of grain. You have big stomachs."
"Why do you care?" The raider thrust his shoulders back and his chin forward. His bloodshot eyes glittered. "They're just farmers." Serevek's mild tone didn't change.
"Because they were farmers under my protection, and now they're dead. I'll ask again. How many of you rats are hiding in those caves?"
The man clamped his lips together and refused to say anything more. He fell back on his haunches with a gasp when Anuzette lunged at him, claws curled. "He'll talk for me," she snarled in Baskai. Serevek checked her advance with one arm.
"Patience," he said in the same tongue. "Here, I am the law, and he's broken it by murdering and stealing within my territory."
He turned to the captured raider and switched back to common tongue.
"You're far from home, and I know there are no Kai from where you hail, so Let me enlighten you.
The circle of Kai and Belladine tightened around them. Ildiko was unable to dredge up a drop of sympathy for the suddenly pale prisoner. Serevek's cold smile would have frozen a candle flame.
A long time ago, the Kai hunted humans for food. If you refuse to talk, I'm going to feed you to them. From what I know, they aren't concerned whether or not their meal is alive or dead when they start eating.
Were Ildiko not used to the toothy Kai after months of living amongst them, she would have fled in terror at the sight of so many fanged grins that flashed at the raider after Serevek's threat. The man whimpered and promptly lost control of his bladder. The pungent odour of urine saturated the air. Words tumbled out of his mouth so fast and stuttering that Serevek had to make him repeat himself several times over. By the time the interrogation ended, they all knew the numbers of enemies hiding in the caves.
How many magefinders remained, and which cave held Brishan?
Serevek stood and motioned with one hand. The raider was jerked to his feet. Ildiko gasped as the Belladine Lord moved with breathtaking speed. A flash of hands, the brittle snap of bone, and the dead raider dropped in a heap to the floor. In the time it took for Ildiko to inhale a breath, Serevek had broken the man's neck with one swift, practiced motion. She swayed and clutched Anuzet's arm, overtaken by dizziness and a distinct buzzing in her ears. The Kai woman pressed a supporting hand to her back and leaned to whisper in her ear.
Strength, Hesegese. Brishan needs you.
The words worked a magic no sorcerer could mimic. The dizziness evaporated, and Ildiko's back stiffened. She refused to look at the still body crumpled at Serevek's feet, but she no longer wanted to faint. The charming, jocular man she'd first met at High Silur and danced with at Sagara was gone. The ruthless Belladine Marcher Lord stood in his place, judge and executioner of any who committed crimes within his borders. He nudged the dead man with his foot.
Take him back to the holt and hang him in the trees with the others. If they haven't soiled their clothes too badly, strip them. We need their garb.
Ildiko trusted whatever plan he had in mind, but the thought of wearing a dead man's clothes made her skin crawl.
What will we do now?
The wolfish smile he gave her made her glad they were on the same side of this particular conflict.
Play raider, he said, and you don't even need to ride a horse.
Are the knots too tight? Anuzet tugged on the strips of cloth that bound Ildiko's hands together. Ildiko shook her head.
No, I can twist out of them quickly if necessary.
They stood within the concealment of heavy underbrush and the overcast shadow of rocky outcropping. Within the shelter of the forest, Kai and Belladine waited together as Ildiko prepared to act as the bait Serevek needed. Her clothes were ripped and filthy, her hair a wild mat of tangles, her face smudged with dirt and streaks of dried blood. Anuzet strengthened the look by shredding random spots of Ildiko's tunic. I still don't think this is the best idea. Ildiko shrugged.
I think Lord Pangian is right. If we want to be sure of entering the right cave, I'm the best thing to draw them out.
Brishan will never forgive me if you die during my watch.
Anuzet tied one of her daggers to the sash encircling Ildiko's waist. The Kai woman's skin was clammy under Ildiko's fingertips, hints of fever in the darkened flush on her cheekbones.
I think he would forgive you anything, Shah Anuzet, she said softly. Besides, I have no intention of dying today.
The other woman stared at her in silence for several moments.
I once thought you weak.
I was wrong. She finished strapping the dagger in place.
Are you afraid?
Ildiko nodded.
Terrified.
Good. You'll stay alert that way. Serevec joined them, accompanied by one of his men dressed in the clothes of one of the dead mercenaries.
Ready?
Ildiko exhaled a shaky breath.
As much as I can be.
Their plan was simple. They'd ascertain the captive raider hadn't lied about his information by luring some of his compatriots out of the caves. Serevec's man, acting as one of them, would lead her before them in full view. The captive Gowri woman they so eagerly sought. That was all they needed from her. Every Belladine soldier would pair up with a Kai, one to fight in the light, one in the dark. Neither helpless as long as the other covered their backs. They'd rush the caves, fight their way in and back out again, hopefully with a living Brishan in tow. Twilight engulfed the sky by the time a stumbling, weeping Ildiko followed her false captor as he jerked her by a lead rope across the clearing toward the caves. Her stomach did somersaults under her ribs, and she peered through the screen of her ragged hair as the cave openings seemed to watch them from eyeless sockets. She stubbed her toe against a jut of rocks hidden within the ankle-high wisps of yellow grass and fell to her knees. The soldier leading her slackened the line.
Highness, he whispered. Pull the rope, she whispered back. Call me names.
If they heard his earlier question, the masquerade was finished. The soldier yanked hard on the rope, dragging her across the ground. She yelped as gravel abraded the exposed skin of her side and the rope welted her wrists.
Get up, bitch, he snapped at her. I don't have all night.
She stumbled to her feet, weaving drunkenly at the end of her tether. A flutter of movement caught her eye. Two figures emerged from one of the smaller cave openings. Cautious in their approach until her captor waved and raised the rope.
I caught her,
he called out in a triumphant voice. Exultant whoops answered, and the two figures became a pair of bedraggled raiders who raced towards him. Their celebration was short-lived. The ambush they'd earlier set upon the Kai was turned on them. Belladine and Kai warriors swarmed from the forest and rushed the cave opening. Ildiko caught only glimpses of Serevec and Anuzet as they plunged into the cave's darkness before a Kai warrior lifted her off her feet and fled with her into the forest. This time she didn't struggle as she had with Anuzet. She waited, free of her bonds, amidst a circle of tense, heavily armed guards, and watched the cave with eyes that watered because she was too afraid to blink. Light flashes illuminated the darkness in brief bursts. The ring of metal on metal mingled with shouts and cries of pain. Her heart paused in its thunderous beating when the noise died, and all she heard were the soft hoots of owls and the rustle of rodents hiding in the leaves. It was full dark, and the moon planished the landscape in silver armour. Ildiko laced her fingers together and prayed to gods she hoped would be merciful this night. Her prayer was answered when Serevec's and Anuzet's warriors spilled out of the cave. She cried out, feet flying across the brittle grass toward the war party. Anuzet emerged from their midst to catch Ildiko about the waist and spin her around.
We have him, Hesegese,
she said in a tight voice. Ildiko gripped the other woman's arms.
Where is he?
Ildiko, he's been tortured. Her knees gave, and she sagged in Anuzet's arms. Shock quickly gave way to rage.
I want to see him now, she said.
Anuzet nodded and guided her through the flow of soldiers until they reached a small knot gathered near the cave entrance. Serevec stood when he caught sight of her. He blocked her path and her view.
Do
Do you have a strong stomach?
He asked. He looked even more severe than when he'd snapped the raider's neck. Blood dripped off the sword he held, and his dark eyes glittered hard as diamonds in the moonlight.
Get out of my way, Lord Pangian,
she snapped. He stepped aside, and she brushed past him to fall to her knees beside the prone figure in the grass.
Brishan lay before her, quiet and still. At least, she thought it was him. A scream swelled in her chest, roiled into her throat, and seeped through her clenched teeth, an inhuman cry of anguish. Anuzette hadn't lied, but she hadn't expounded either. Brishan's face, elegant, regal, and sublime by Kai standards, was swollen beyond recognition, mottled with bruises and cuts and washed in blood. It streaked his cheeks in cracked black ribbons that ran from his hairline to his chin. His mouth had been split multiple times, and the high bridge of his nose was crooked and swelled to twice its width. His right eye had swollen shut, and where his left eye should have been, only a sunken eyelid over an empty socket remained. She clapped a hand over her mouth, but refused to close her eyes. Bruises covered every part of his body she could see, and her gaze froze on his hands. They hadn't stopped with his eye. Ildiko traced a delicate line over the back of his left hand. The lethal claws that could split a man from gullet to navel, yet tease her skin with the lightest touch, were ripped out, leaving behind only bloody, mangled nail beds. His right hand matched his left. Ildiko stroked the hair just above his head with a trembling hand, afraid to touch him, afraid his beaten, brutalized body would disintegrate before her eyes. She didn't know what she wanted to do more, scream her anguish or shriek her rage.
My poor love, she whispered. Why?
Serevek spoke behind her.
We think the leader got away. We slaughtered all but a half dozen, who say they can tell us who hired them in exchange for mercy. What do you wish to do, Highness?
Ildiko stared at Brishan, at the shallow rise and fall of his chest, as he breathed gurgling breaths.
He stank of blood and agony. The wind lifted a strand of his hair, and she caught it between two fingers. It stuck to her skin, matted with gore.
She didn't care who hired animals to unleash their savagery.
Kill them, she said in a flat voice. Kill them all.
When they returned to Sagara, she sequestered herself in Brishan's chamber and didn't leave for 4 days. She bathed there, ate there, and dressed there. Except for brief dozing spells, she didn't sleep there. The small troop of healers who tended her husband came and went, each time assuring her that time, rest, and regular doses of Masoret Tizane would see him through his ordeal. Ildiko found it ironic that the poison sap used to bring Anuzette low served a more merciful purpose in staving off Brishan's pain. He slept peacefully, his bandaged hands resting across his stomach. More bandages covered the arrow wounds in his shoulder and legs. Ildiko sat for hours in a chair next to the bed, content to watch him. The swelling had slowly receded, and the blood and dirt were gone. His right eyelid twitched as he slept. The left she couldn't see. White cloth swathed that side of his face, hiding the deep cut that ran from below his lower lashes to the top curve of his cheekbone, testament to the brutality used when his captors cut out his eye. Delirium didn't plague him, and he drank the tisanes the healers coaxed on him without waking. Ildiko read to him sometimes, and ventured a song or two, before her voice warbled too much to continue. Anuzet often visited, updating him on the fortress's daily activities, as if he sat before her, awake and demanding a status. She didn't stay long. Ildiko always knew when Anuzet was about to bolt from the chamber. Her hands flexed on her sword pommel, as if she wanted nothing more than to kill Brishan's torturers a second time. Ildiko knew exactly how she felt. "You'll send for me as soon as he wakes?" The same question each time before Anuzet escaped. "Of course." Ildiko promised each time she asked. No longer afraid to touch him, she caressed the unbandaged side of Brishan's face. Ildiko had once admired him, naked and glorious on his bed, within a corona of golden sunlight, and thought him invulnerable. How terribly wrong she had been. "This should never have happened, Brishan." The inevitable, annoying tears threatened, and she blinked hard to force them back. "We were unimportant, you and I. We weren't supposed to mean anything to anyone." A slow, deep sigh escaped his lips, and his right eyelid opened, revealing a glowing lamplight gaze. Brishan's voice was hoarse from disuse, but still clear. "Woman of day," he said slowly, "you mean everything to me." No amount of blinking this time held back Ildiko's tears. They streamed down her cheeks to drip off her chin and onto Brishan's shoulder. "Prince of Night," she said, in a watery voice that echoed another moment when she'd greeted him with the same words. "You've come back to me." Chapter 22. Brishan was a man who chose to see the good that came of any situation. He had yet to find it with the loss of this eye, but he had discovered it with the loss of his claws. While his recollection of his torture remained murky, his fingers still throbbed sometimes, as if the memory of a terrible pain had embedded itself in his flesh. The nail beds had healed over the months, the claws slowly growing across the exposed skin. They were still short, well below the quick, but lengthening and hardening every day. He'd have a full set of scythes on both hands within a year. For now, though, he took advantage of his disadvantage by drawing invisible murals across his wife's naked back and buttocks with his sensitive fingertips. She lay on her stomach in his bed, their bed now, her head resting on her folded arms, her face partially shielded from his gaze by locks of red hair. He lay recumbent beside her, sketching looping designs along the graceful indention of her spine, down to the pair of dimples that decorated her lower back. Her skin pebbled under his touch, and a patch of muscle contracted involuntarily as his fingers glided over her body. It was a sensual pleasure to touch her this way, a fine thing that sprang unexpectedly from brutality. She was in no danger of being scratched or lacerated, and Brishan had discovered that fingers with short nails could do things that ones with claws could not, things that made Ildiko writhe in his arms and leave claw marks of her own on his shoulders. If he didn't depend on the martial edge his claws gave him, Brishan would keep his short for that reason alone. Ildiko pushed her hair away to look at him. "What?" he asked. He'd stopped searching for revulsion in her gaze weeks ago. There was none to be found, except for the sympathetic kisses she placed on his eyebrow and the flattened lid over his empty eye socket. She remained untroubled by his mutilated visage. She watched him now with an expression softened by post-coital languor. I think I fell in love with you during our wedding." Her statement sent a rush of euphoria through Brishan that left him light-headed. His hand flattened on her back before sliding up between her shoulder blades to bury itself in her hair. Her every action, every laugh, every caress spoke of her great affection for him. But this was the first time she said she loved him. An upbringing in the Kai court had taught him to control his emotions. A good thing, too, or he would snatch his wife into a hard embrace and accidentally break every bone in her body. He settled for hooking an arm under her side and dragging her closer to him. "It took you that long," he teased. "You are difficult to win. I tried very hard during our first meeting in the gardens." Ildiko spluttered. Her leg slid between his knees, riding higher to rest against his thigh. "Calling me a hag is not the best courtship gesture. As I recall, you threatened to bash my skull in because of my appearance, and that was when I was magnificent to behold."
He wiggled his eyebrows at her.
His smile faded when she didn't return it. She traced the bony ridge of his cheekbone, fissured by scars inflicted by a knife. "They took your eye, Brishan," she said, "not your character. You're still magnificent." His control only went so far.
Brishan groaned and rolled to his back, taking Ildiko with him.
It was a long hour later before he peeled himself out of his wife's embrace and kicked the blankets away from them both. Ildiko grabbed for the closest sheet. "What are you doing?" Her skin glowed, washed a shade of pink similar to the bitten mollusk.
Brishan curled his clawless hands into fists to keep from caressing her and losing yet another hour.
He sat up and swung his legs to the floor. "My mother will be here soon." Ildiko flopped back onto her pillow with a groan. "Oh, don't remind me. I've already warned Sinwe to check the bedding and clothes chests in both rooms once she's gone." He hadn't been any more thrilled than Ildiko when a messenger from Haridas had arrived a week earlier to warn them of Sekhmet's visit. "At least she is only here for 2 nights.
"Those will be the longest 2 nights of our lives."
He couldn't agree more. They helped each other dress in the quiet of the chamber. The halls below them were a hornet's nest of frantic activity in preparation for the Queen's visit. Brishan had wanted to tell his servants to leave Segara and visit family, friends, anyone for a few days. Sekhmet could fend for herself. Ildiko had met that suggestion with an expression of nostril-flaring indignation.
"I will not be known as a rude, unwelcoming hostess," she said in a voice that Anuzet told him later sounded exactly like when she ordered his captor's execution.
Brishan had hidden his smile and backed quickly away from the idea. He paused in lacing his tunic when Ildiko handed him the eye patch he wore outside their bedroom.
"I thought you didn't like it when I wore this."
The first time he tried it on, Ildiko had stepped back, alarmed.
"It makes you look vicious," she said with a scowl.
He still hadn't figured out how a mouthful of fangs or claw-tipped hands didn't bother her anymore, but a harmless eye patch did. But he wished to please her, and wore it only if they hosted guests or visited the villages and townships. She shrugged.
"This is your mother. She'll approve."
While Brishan had acceded to Ildiko's wishes of tearing the fortress apart and putting it back together again for the Queen's visit, he refused to plan a greeting of great fanfare when she arrived.
If he didn't think Sekhmet would try and take his other eye, he'd make her sleep in the stables.
Instead, his soldiers lined up in 2 parallel rows and saluted the Queen with their swords as she rode through the gates with a modest entourage. Brishan waited at the end, Ildiko on one side of him, Anuzet on the other. His cousin spoke under her breath. If you order a dance and command me to attend, I will gut you in your sleep. Ildiko's muffled laughter lightened the moment, and Brishan quirked a smile at Anuzette. No worries. If I didn't have to feed her, I wouldn't. Dancing would just invite her to stay longer. The visit was as excruciating as Ildiko predicted, but his unflappable wife persevered under Sekhmet's contemptuous scrutiny and critical remarks. In fact, she mostly ignored the queen, except when spoken to, or to ask if her accommodations were comfortable. Her focus centred on Brishan, who counted the minutes until his mother finally left Sagara and left them in peace. He didn't ask her if the Belladine had tried to negotiate his release with her by forcing an annulment of his marriage, and Sekhmet remained silent on the matter as well. Her curious gaze took in his altered features and the way he'd balance a pitcher of wine against his glass before pouring. The loss of his eye was not without consequence. He was completely blind on his left side. No flickers of movement or changing shades of light. The first fortnight had been the most frustrating. He couldn't get out of the way of his own nose. It filled his vision, large as a crane's beak. That had faded over time, but he still struggled with a sense of depth. Walking upstairs presented a challenge with the first step, but the angle of his shadow aided him in sensing the changing depth and height of the steps. Walking down was another matter. His shadow fell straight in front of him, and the steps were nothing more than a smooth, sloping descent to his compromised vision. He still kept one hand on the wall until he adjusted to the regularity of the tread's rise and fall. He refused to be an invalid, and as soon as the healers pronounced him well enough to leave his bed, he donned light armour and joined Anuzette in the practice arena. His cousin treated his appearance as nothing out of the ordinary. Her patience was long, and her sympathy non-existent, as she helped him to relearn the skills of combat as a one-eyed fighter. Brishan mentioned none of this to Sekhmet. He had no doubt she'd laughed when the Belladine had presented their threat to her. Her younger son's death was of little importance. His survival and recuperation even less so. Patience finally worn away by Sekhmet's constant haranguing, Ildiko had excused herself well before dawn and fled for the sanctuary of their chamber. Brishan had let her go with a polite nod and cool bow. If Sekhmet even sensed his affection for Ildiko, she'd make things difficult for them. Sekhmet tapped a claw on the rim of her goblet and watched Ildiko disappear into the stairwell. She turned to Brishan. "So, has she taken your Belladine neighbour as her lover yet?" He had wondered how long it would take her to fire her first volley. "No." She arched a doubtful eyebrow. "Are you sure? I'm told he is handsome to human women, and even to some of the Kai. And, of course, he has both eyes." Second volley, this time dipped in malice. "I'm sure." Sekhmet frowned at his lack of reaction to her insults. "You haven't asked yet why I'm here." Brishan shrugged. "Sagara is part of your kingdom. I'm its caretaker. I assume you're acting as the king's emissary." Whatever reason for the visit, it wasn't good. He just had to wait until she revealed her purpose and brace for whatever impact it had. She stretched in her chair, reminding him of a great cat, lithe, hungry, and ready to disembowel anything that moved. "Maybe I just wish to visit my younger son." He gulped down a swallow of wine to prevent breaking into guffaws. Sekhmet continued their one-sided conversation. "Your claws are growing back. You don't seem any worse for your ordeal, other than the scar and being left half blind." She spoke as if he'd taken a walk through the woods and stubbed his toe.
I bear strong children, she said. When you're not snapping their necks, he thought, but stayed silent.
Her self-satisfied smile changed, becoming something that sent a crawling chill down his back. It took everything within him not to shrink away or leap from his seat when she stroked his forearm in a slow caress.
"It's a shame you're my son," she purred. "You would have made a magnificent consort."
A surge of bile burned up his throat. Brishan grabbed for the pitcher, braced it against his goblet, and poured wine until it touched the brim. He emptied the cup in two swallows. "Why have you come, Your Majesty?" Never before had he struggled so hard not to reveal his loathing for this woman who bore him. Her knowing gaze warned he might not be as stoic as he hoped. She reached into a pocket of her tunic and brought out a small, decorative box. She placed it on the table and slid it toward him. He squelched the urge to push it back.
"I came to bring you this. It's yours."
The Queen gave a nonchalant shrug.
"I have no idea why it was sent to me. It isn't as if I would do anything with it."
She stood, and he scrambled to stand with her and bow.
"You can wait to open it when your wife is with you."
She swept around the table and signalled to the two handmaidens who hovered nearby, ready to serve her every whim.
"I'm not staying a second night," she announced. "Sagara lacks the most basic creature comforts. Uncomfortable beds, boring food, and even duller company. No need to accompany me to the gates. I'll leave sooner without you and a dirty troop of soldiers following after me. I'll tell your father you send your regards."
2 hours later, Brishan breathed a sigh of relief as Sekhmis and company disappeared into the horizon. The journey would be hard going for the riders. The Queen would shelter in a wagon shielded from the sun by dark curtains. Her escort would have to ride hooded and squinting for several hours before they found relief. He didn't envy them. He found Ildiko still dressed in her finery and standing at one of the windows in their room. She turned to greet him with a smile.
She chose not to stay. Oh, thank the gods.
She literally skipped into his welcoming arms.
"I will never believe you are that woman's son, bred and born."
Unfortunately, he was, but he'd succeeded in his endeavour to be nothing like her when others expressed their disbelief that they were in any way related.
His skin crawled again at the memory of her words.
"Too bad you're my son. You would have made a magnificent consort."
"I've called for a bath," he said. "I need a good scrubbing. Will you join me?"
Ildiko nodded eagerly and spied the box he held.
"What is that?"
"She said she came here to bring me this." Ildiko backed away from him.
"Maybe you should don your armour before you open it."
He had a notion of what might be inside. Sekhmis's idea of humour was usually someone else's idea of horror.
"I'll open it later."
Unfortunately, his wife's curiosity couldn't be quelled.
"Won't you let me see?"
He sighed.
"I don't think it will be pleasant, Ildiko."
She frowned at him.
"Then you should definitely not open it alone."
She had stood beside him through events far grimmer than opening a gift from Sekhmis, and held her own. She'd do so again. Ildiko did wobble when Brishan opened the lid to reveal the box's contents, and she clutched his arm.
"That bitch," she breathed. "That vile, horrible bitch. She came all this way to sink a knife."
Brishan had guessed correctly, and didn't flinch when he saw what lay inside Sekhmis's gift box. His eye, shriveled to a withered ochreous orb, rolled back and forth inside the box like a carved pebble in a child's game of Hecklestones. He put the lid back on the box and threw the entire thing into the fire built in the hearth.
Flames devoured the container, shooting hungry sparks against the grate.
She must have been bored in Harrodus.
Ildiko scowled at him, her tone waspish.
How can you not be angry? I want to punch her in her smirking face. She fisted her left hand and smacked the palm of her right hand with a hard thwack. Brishan turned to her so that she fully faced him.
The silk sleeves of her shirt rode smooth under his hands as he stroked her arms in a soothing gesture.
Because she's predictable. She has yet to do anything I didn't expect.
Tears turned Ildiko's eyes glossy, and she blinked hard. She would have let you die, perched on that throne like some great bloated spider, and let them kill you. Remember, wife, I'm the spare of no value. She lunged for him and wrapped her arms around his waist. Her soft breasts pressed against his chest as she hugged him as hard as she could. You are of great value to me, she said into his tunic. She raised her head, her eyes narrowed and still teary. I wish I could kill them again, Brishan. I wish I could kill her. He threaded her hair through his clawless fingers before bending to kiss her forehead. I love you, my bloodthirsty hag. Ildiko sniffed and offered him a watery smile.
That's a good thing, because you'll have to suffer through dinner later. I thought your mother would be here another night, so I ordered potatoes to be served.
Brishan threw back his head and laughed. He lifted Ildiko off her feet to spin her around.
She was breathless when he put her down and managed to wiggle out of his embrace with a dizzy stumble.
I have something for you as well, she said, and it isn't a body part. She retrieved a velvet pouch from the chest at the end of their bed and handed it to him. The jeweller from Halmatus Township delivered it along with my necklace while you were healing. I'd forgotten about it until Sinue and I were checking the wardrobes for hidden scarpetine. Brishan opened the satchel and upended its contents into his palm.
His breath caught at the sight of a cabochon, half the size to the one Ildiko's mother had given her.
This one was cut from citrine quartz and as bright as a Kai's gaze at midnight. A spark of deeper orange pulsed within the stone's depth. A recolligere. Ildiko had managed to find a memory jewel. He glanced at her. How did you come by one of these?
Ildiko shrugged.
He said they were rare.
They are. If this stone held what he thought it did, he was going to revisit Halmatus Township, and the visit wouldn't be friendly. Ildiko, the spell used to make these work is dangerous, unpredictable. You didn't... She nodded, confirming his fear. I'm going to kill that jeweller.
Ildiko huffed. It was perfectly safe for me. Memory madness only affects the Kai, and I'm not Kai. Neither one of us thought the spell would work. I think he was as surprised as I was that it did.
Her fingers drifted over his, over the stone, hesitant, unsure. Her strange eyes pleaded with him to accept her gift.
If I die before you, I have no Mortimlight for you to carry to Emlek. That recolligere holds one of my memories. You can take that instead. A paler light. She made him strong. She made him weak. And in that moment, she nearly put him on his knees. Brisson gathered her into his embrace. The recolligere clutched in his hand. He kissed her cheeks, her temples, the corners of her eyes wet with tears. When he reached her mouth, he paused.
"Not a paler light," he said. "A radiant one, from a woman in whose presence I will never be blind."
"Love me," she whispered against his lips.
"Always."
Epilogue. In chambers far below the public rooms of the royal palace, Queen Sekhmis cut the heart out of her latest lover's dead body and dropped it into a pewter basin. Blood still pumped in sluggish streams from the severed arteries to half-submerge the heart in a crimson pool. Sekhmis dipped her fingers into the bowl and sketched arcane symbols on the body stretched across the gore-soaked bed. She spoke words, neither Baskai nor common, but ones that lacerated her tongue with every syllable uttered. The flavours of iron and salt filled her mouth, and she spat between sentences so as not to choke on her own blood. The Kai's butchered body twitched and began to flail, while the exposed lungs did the impossible and bloated with air. It was working. Her incantation was working. So many years, so many failed consecratives. Finally! She laughed, a gleeful sound as sweet as a child's, as mad as a demon's. No longer would she just be queen of a fading race. She would rule all kingdoms, all people, Kai and human, and she would do so for thousands of years. Undying, never aging, all-powerful. A night queen instead of the weaker shadow one. The power she invoked had slept for longer than even the memories of the oldest Mortemlights in Emlek. The spell to awaken it had killed more than its share of mages. It required blood and fear, memory and innocence. Sekhmis thought she held the final ingredient when she birthed a daughter, a child born, not made, deformed and pushed from her womb. She growled, even as she drew more bloody symbols on the thrashing body. Sekhmis never discovered who had taken the infant she'd marked for the ceremony, but she suspected. Brisson had been a cheerful, congenial child. He did as he was told, never rebelled or shown any ambition to replace his brother as heir. Sekhmis had noted his character and promptly forgotten him. Only when he'd grown older had she caught hints of a hidden strength, an implacable will, and a cold, reptilian hatred that flickered in his eyes any time she met his gaze. His response to his new sister's unexpected death had been a shrug before he resumed his mock battle with Anuzet through the palace corridors. He'd given Sekhmis a wide, frightened stare when she'd raged about the infant's disappearance and yawned through the memorial they held for her. Still, Sekhmis always wondered. Her younger son was far more layered, far more complex than she gave him credit for, and far more intelligent than the pliable heir apparent. He had cheerfully married that repulsive Gowri girl and gone about the business of settling her at Sagara without complaint. He hadn't confronted Sekhmis about the scarpentine in his wife's bedroom, preferring instead to pack up and leave. He'd outmaneuvered her by obtaining Jador's permission first. His was a quiet rebellion of strategy, manipulation and an unruffled demeanour. Only that glimmer of loathing in his eyes every time he looked at Sekhmis gave him away. When a Belladine messenger, carrying demands for negotiations of his release, handed her proof of his capture, she'd stared into that mangled eye and seen the expression stamped there in the flat, yellow gaze. His torture had not broken him. She'd seen it herself. Scarred and half blind, Brishan still ruled Sagara with a firm hand and commanded both the respect and fierce loyalty of his followers. Sekhmiz hadn't lied when she told him he would have made a magnificent consort, but only if they shared power, and Sekhmiz was through with sharing power. She completed the last of the spell. The dead Kai, a lesser ambassador of the royal court, stilled beneath her hands. His mouth was still warm as she pressed her lips to his and exhaled. Oily, black smoke poured from her mouth into his before swirling out through his nostrils. His lungs expanded, contracted, and repeated the process. Sekhmiz stepped away as the dead sat up.
"Speak the words," she commanded.
The speech uttered was none ever spoken by the living, and desecrated the dead who did. A wet coldness settled in the chamber as the dead man recited unintelligible words that tore jagged wounds into his skin and wrenched cracks in the walls and ceiling. One crack widened to a gaping splice of darkness, even thicker than what already existed in the chamber. It spilled out of the crack, thick as lamp oil and reeking of a charnel house. Sekhmiz laughed and clapped her hands as the viscous black oozed up the walls and across the floor, spawning, writhing silhouettes with crimson gazes. She'd done it. Rent the veil between worlds and brought forth an unconquerable legion bound to her commands.
"To me,"
she ordered, spreading her arms wide. They came to her as she commanded, but not as she hoped. One slippery shadow twined around her neck and struck with a gaping maw. Sekhmiz yelped, suffocating in the thick sludge as the entity forced its way down her throat. She clawed the air and tried to scream. More of the sinuous shapes wrapped around her, seeking gaps in her clothing, every entrance to her body, until she was nothing more than a choking, dancing puppet, slammed one way and then another, as the shadows shrieked and laughed and cavorted. They fell silent for a moment, unfurling and creeping away from the grotesque jumble of bones and bloody flesh that had once been a queen renowned for her beauty and feared for her power. The shapes whispered among themselves, adding sibilant voices to the voice of the dead man, with no heart, who still incanted the words of a poisoned language. The crack in the wall widened, spilling more of the demonic phantasms into the chamber. They eddied around the dead Kai, undulating across the floor and crawled around the door, seeping through the cracks between the wall and frame. The dead Kai spoke on, even when the first screams of the living resonated through the stones. This has been Radiance, written by Grace Draven, narrated by Gabrielle Baker. Copyright 2014 Grace Draven. Production copyright 2015 Grace Draven.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.